Yeah? Okay, so this work is a continuation of my thesis project that was done with Mirav Ofer, who's now at Boston University, and collaborators from the University of Michigan, including Bart VanderHulst. Okay, so although we have a really rich data set of CMEs close to the sun, it's really challenging to determine the kinetic, the thermal energy budget, the magnetic energy budget, energetic particle contribution, when the CME is very close to the sun. There have been a limited number of studies, mostly done on slower eruptions, where you get a lot of images, where one can put simultaneous constraints on the mass, the speed, and the temperature of the eruption. Okay, so showing one of those in this figure here, where they're tracing both separate components of the CME core here, and the post-CME current sheet. Now, an important result of these type of studies is actually close to the sun, the thermal energy budget can actually be larger or equal to the kinetic energy, the bulk plasma of these components of the CME. So this is important in terms of constraining CME models, CME propagation and initiation. And so the natural question to ask is, what is the source of this plasma heating? Okay. So this question is really wide open. There are no less than probably a dozen different mechanisms that people have proposed, ranging from magnetic reconnection to shocks to the dissipation of waves. So there have been some single event case studies where people have tried to estimate the different contributions from all these different possible mechanisms. And what I'm showing here is a study from Murphy and collaborators where they actually tracked different CME plasma, I'll call them plasma blobs, as shown in this coronagraph image, and went through actually all of these different mechanisms. So if you want to talk about wave heating, the way that that's been done in previous studies is to estimate the heating rate or the damping rate of the waves based on models of how this wave heating works in just the fast solar wind, so just from coronal holes. So that's a damping rate that falls off exponentially with distance from the sun and a constant damping length, which is usually taken to be like one solar radii or less. So when this was applied in these observational studies, the conclusion that they came up with is that the heating from this mechanism is many orders of magnitude too weak in order to reproduce the observed temperatures, for example. But what the authors point out is that this is just the heating in just in the background solar wind, and the CME itself can actually drive waves, which could then be dissipated. So that's the exact question that we're going to study in this work. So what happens when you take into account the interaction of the transient with the background solar wind? How does that change wave damping? Okay? So we propose to answer this question using the space weather modeling framework, which was developed at the University of Michigan. As a part of this framework, there's a global MHD wave-driven solar wind model, and they can also simulate eruptions with this model. So by wave-driven, I mean that there are no ad hoc heating terms in the energy equation, and the polytropic index in the model is fixed to the adiabatic value of 5/3. So all the heating comes from the dissipation of waves. Those waves are modeled with an additional equation, a wave transport equation, which is coupled to the MHD equations through terms in the momentum and the energy equation. Okay? And the way that the heating is done in this model is that it's not fixed ahead of time. It's calculated self-consistently at each iteration based on the local plasma properties. So the amount of wave energy available to be damped, magnetic field, density, and density gradient values. Some limitations with this approach is that the eruption itself is not modeled self-consistently. It's just I launched the eruption with an out-of-equilibrium flux rope, so I'm not capturing that initiation process close to the sun. And the second thing, which is kind of connected a little bit, is that in this, in the form of the model that I'm going to show you results from today, The wave energy is only applied in open magnetic field regions, and since I'm going to start the eruption out inside of the closed streamer, you have to wait until it actually exits the streamer to start studying this interaction. This was recently lifted, and I'll come back to this at the end of the talk. Okay, so I put in this out of equilibrium flux rope, and it just goes off like a bomb, quickly explodes, drives a shockwave. In this simulation, the speed was around 1,500 kilometers per second. So as the ejecta expands, one thing that it does is it piles up material from the solar corona ahead of it, and that's what we're looking at in this movie here. So this is 40 minutes after I launched the flux rope, and you're looking at the vantage point as if the CME is moving towards you, okay? The black lines trace out magnetic field lines that you can see how they're draped around the ejecta. And what is moving out, what is the movie is showing spheres of between 2 and 5.5 solar radii, and they're colored with the density enhancement. So between the density at this time versus the steady state density in the solution. And what you can see is that as the CME moves out, as it expands, it piles up material in front of it, and the sheath is a very highly structured region. And that's gonna come into play when I talk about the dissipation of the waves. Okay, so in order to study this interaction between the transient inside of the solar wind and how the wave the wave damping evolves, we're gonna look at this extra equation that's solved in this model. And it's showing us the evolution of the wave energy density, that's CEW, based on three different contributions here. Let me just first tell you what all these terms are. The VG is the group velocity of the wave. PW is the wave pressure. U is going to be the solar wind speed from the solution. And then this gamma here is the dissipation rate. Okay? And what each of these terms are, this can be thought of as the waves being advected out with the solar wind. This is the wave stress term, which you can think of as either the waves doing work on the solar wind or the solar wind doing work on the waves. This is what's coupled to the momentum equation, the MHD momentum equation. And then this last term here, the wave dissipation, so this is that Q that I'm actually going to be looking for. Okay? So what we did is I integrated each of these terms in a huge volume that contains the entire CME over the first 40 minutes of the simulation. And what you can see at the beginning here, for the first 10 minutes, nothing's really happening as the CME is in this closed streamer region where there actually are no waves. But as the CME moves out of that region, it starts piling up the mass ahead of it, starts piling up the magnetic field, piling up the wave energy. And what you can see that actually starts to happen with this green curve here is that this grad PW term that before the CME was there was acting as a way to accelerate the fast solar wind actually changes sign. And now there's a momentum exchange from the plasma back to the waves. So in this CME sheath, the actual amount of wave energy available to the system starts increasing. Okay? So and then at the same time, that CME sheath is very structured, which actually creates an environment where the damping actually happens easier, more easily. So you have more, I'll show you in words, so you have more wave energy available to dissipate, and then also the damping itself is stronger. So it, in turn, heat goes back to heating the plasma. So let's see how that looks spatially, how the wave heating looks spatially. So the plot that I'm showing here is as a function of height along a radial line, this heating rate, and the red line is taken from the simulation, which you may remember is a sum of two different contributions, one from these gradients in density and the other that's mimicking a turbulent cascade. And then the blue line is this exponential form where I've set L to be equal to 0.7 solar radii, and then scaled it up to match the heating rate in the simulation at the top of the streamer, so at the beginning of the open field region. So what you may notice is that although there's a pretty good match from like 2 to 4 solar radii, there's more extended heating out in the simulation than what you would find if you used a fixed dissipation length. So that's just something we can talk about later if you want, just something to point out. Okay, so now I'm showing the same thing, except instead of just the heating rate itself, I divided by the density to get us the heating per unit mass in the simulation. So this is 20 minutes after inserting the flux rope, and this is 40 minutes after. And again, the red line's from the simulation, and the blue line is this fixed form from just the solar wind heating. So what you can see is that in the simulation, you actually do have orders of magnitude larger wave heating than you would get if you just assumed this constant damping rate. At 20 minutes, it's 2 orders of magnitude, and here it's even greater, 3 or 4. So what this indicates to us, this preliminary simulation indicates to us that at least if you're talking about the sheath region, that the heating by waves may be orders of magnitude more than what you would just find if you're just talking about the solar wind. So I'd like to spend maybe one more minute talking about future steps. So you may remember in this work we were limited because the waves are only traveling in the open magnetic field regions, but that has since been lifted, and so now there's actually wave energy along closed loops and in open field regions. So I'm no longer just having to focus in the sheath. So what I'm doing now is doing more simulations and trying to relate it back to those observational studies that motivated this from the beginning and see if the results that we found in the sheath can be applied to SEMI plasma blobs. And also, the model can allow us to explore a range of different coronal conditions and different CME properties, fast and slow. So that's it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh. The waves enter in, yeah, okay.
Yes, the waves enter in this model through a WKB approximation,
yes.
Which means basically that the wavelength is much smaller than the typical scale of inhomogeneity.
Yeah.
Now, when you have these CMEs propagating through, this condition may break down, especially at the shock fronts. And may that affect the heating that you see?
So definitely in the shock front, I agree that you're correct. And there will be a range of frequencies for which this treatment that we're doing is not valid, and I haven't worked that out. I worked it out in just the solar wind modeling part of it, and the frequencies were okay on this with waves of periods of a few minutes. It was okay, but that is definitely something to think about. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought this wasn't a point of our work, that it's not a WKB. I thought that they were doing waves being essentially including the fact that waves are reflected at the critical points and counterpropagate.
That is the newest version.
But that's not what
you're
used
about here.
But that's not what you used here.
Yeah, I used the 2010 version. Yeah.
When you said you had the heating in the sheath was orders of magnitude larger than that in the solar wind, is that because the amplitude of the waves is much larger in the sheath region, the energy density in the waves?
Yes, that are enhanced due to this interaction between the CME and the solar wind.
Do you know if that has been observed in the solar wind?
I do not know. Good question.